Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Jewelry isn't a gift you give just once. It's a way to remind your loved one of a beautiful moment every time they see it. Blue Nile can help you find the gift that says how you feel and says it beautifully, with expert guidance and a wide assortment of jewelry of the highest quality at the best price. Go to BlueNile.com and experience the convenience of shopping Blue Nile, the original online jeweler since 1999. That's BlueNile.com to find the perfect jewelry gift for any occasion. BlueNile.com.
In this podcast, chat about the defeat to Plymouth, look ahead to Stoke, and answer your podcast questions. This is the Borough Breakdown podcast, and this is our Borough Matchday Chatter in a pod.
Support. Curtis Fleming is there on the edge of the area. Fleming for Craig Hignett. Hit it, Higgy. Higgy hits the treble!
Abanelli coming alive again. Janino wants the ball played to him. Abanelli spots out.
Hello and welcome to the Borough Breakdown podcast with Johnny, Dana and Tom. We're the Borough podcast that gives you all of your Borough Matchday chatter in a podcast. And another home defeat for Borough, seeing us be in mid-table, firmly in mid-table as well, with 44 points so far this season. Guys, one key takeout, as always. You both look absolutely delighted to be this afternoon. So, yeah, let's see your takeouts. Dana, trying to go first.
Yeah, there's a song called Blue by one of my favourite artists, Lolo Zuai. And the first line of that is, days like this make me feel like shit. And that game yesterday made me feel like shit. I'm so bored of witnessing the same rinse and repeat situations. I'm so bored of seeing us concede really poor, sloppy, avoidable goals. I'm so sick of seeing us really struggle to break a team down when they come to the Riverside. And above all, I am so sick of teams going to that away corner after the game, all celebratory, because they should be miserable and yet they're not. And we're just so poor and we're so gifting towards teams, the Riverside, this season. It is not a good advert for next season, given the ticket price increase fiasco this week. It's just not been a very good week. And yeah, I'm bored, I'm sick, I'm tired. I'm looking forward to the summer where we can have another rebuild inevitably. And yeah, I'm just kind of done with this season. I've got to be honest, it's taken its toll on me, guys. It has.
Is it always a rebuild if you're constantly doing it? So that's kind of where I'm at.
Philosophical.
Is it, you know, maybe something for people who are sitting in the cars now, driving to work or whatever they may be, look, could be in the park with the dog, who knows? But they're like, that is a rebuild. Tom, anyway, what's your one key takeout?
You know what, I'm going to take inspiration from what Dana's just done and also sum it up in a song. Classic from Green Day. I'm going to say, wake me up when the season ends, because... Also, like Dana, I am completely bored of going to the Riverside and seeing shite performances. It's players making basic mistakes week in, week out. Just for any Plymouth fans watching, better team yesterday. In general, I like Plymouth as a club and I like the way he's playing and stuff like that. I feel like I have to give a little bit of credit because we've had teams in the past this season who just have a little bit of a whinge when you talk about your own team and don't give them enough credit. Not naming any names, but it was Ipswich. I'm going to be ranty on this podcast, and it should have been a couple of weeks ago after the Bristol game, you know, before I got food poisoning and nearly died, but it was... It's just the same every home game at the moment. I'm just really sick of seeing it. Like I say, basic mistakes. People You know, we can go to Leicester and get a result and then 7 days later look like a team who've never played together and don't know how to pass a ball 5 yards to each other. Our off the ball movement's shocking at home at times, and I really don't understand what's going on this season for a load of players. Accidentally muted myself there. A load of players that we have to just suddenly start making basic mistakes and playing below their level because we know they are better than this and they're just not performing like it.
Yeah, and you know what? I'm going to follow suit with all the songs. I feel like I got hated or love it by the game of 50 Cent, I think, because at one point I absolutely love watching us play and I think it's great. And when I compare it to like promotion teams, I love it. And I'm just like, yeah, this team's great. And the other flip side, within the space of a week, I can absolutely hate them, and I think we're worse than Strachan's Boris. So it's just, and I just don't get it. I just don't get how you could be so good 1 week and so shit the next. But there's inconsistencies that is pretty much the championship in itself. But it's just so frustrating because you do get the highs of the highs and the lows of the lows, but it's just so bipolar. It's not like a ball draw. It's we're either really good or just really shit. And maybe like a secondary point off that is probably like, not to single out a single person, but like Dan Balassa is like the epitome of Borough because of like if he has a hardcore 1 out of 10, we have a hardcore 1 out of 10. And I feel like he is a really important part in how we're a player. But when he's not on it, we are just so far off the pace. But we'll chat about the defeat to Plymouth then, because Sarinola and Hardy gave Plymouth the second win on the road this season. Very typical Borough, really. They hadn't won at all until they beat Swansea, and then you know they beat us as well. So, guys, get your overall assessment of the game. Then I'll come to you first, then Tom, I'll pass you the mic and let you say what you really think.
Yeah, I'm going to be completely unfiltered here. So if anyone is listening to this in the car with their kids, please just listen to it another time. I thought yesterday we were fucking dreadful. Really, really, really bad. The setup was such a mess. Like up front, you've got McGree as like a shadow striker. Like, why? Force is playing out on the right. Why is he not through the middle? We keep saying it on this podcast. Like, needs must put a striker through the middle. I don't get it. Silvera playing on the left, really just don't like him there. He cuts inside all the time, and every single time his shot gets blocked. And then that double pivot of Barlaster and O'Brien for the second home game running did not work. I do not want to see that. It just doesn't work in that 4-2-3-1. I know Carrick said after the game it was more of a 3-4-3 or three at the back, sorry, in possession in the build-out, but I just don't want to see it because what happens is O'Brien, given the type of player that he is, he's a ball carrier. He wants to get with the pitch and he will do that, and it leaves Barlaster exposed. And in a two anyway, when you've got a player that doesn't maybe get as forward as as much as Lewis O'Brien, he is still exposed. So it doesn't really play to the strengths of Barlaster in particular. We just lacked shape in possession. We knocked an absolute mess out of possession. We were really easy to get at. And ironically, what Plymouth were very good at doing in that game, Borough were awful at, which was cutting inside and getting a shot off. We are just far too weak against the ball and really passive. We allow ourselves to concede opportunities. And as soon as they went 1-0 up, I knew that it was game over. And then 2-0 up, funny enough, the highlight of the game, actually, rather self-deprecating for Borough, but my dad actually said, you're only playing Plymouth. And about 15 seconds later, they scored. So as soon as the ball hit the back of the net, I'm sorry, I had to laugh. I mean, he even referenced Moltke. So if anyone wants a Moltke t-shirt, link in bio for that. But yeah, we probably could have conceded more from there. There was not a single shot on target. Despite a lot of possession, 74%, it was just really flat, boring. We've now lost 5 of our last 7 home games. We haven't won at the Riverside since the 23rd of December against West Brom, and that was also the last time that we kept a clean sheet in the league. It was markedly one of the worst performances of the season, I think. And I've kind of stung myself before likening the whole game to the Sheffield Wednesday game. But actually, the game yesterday was probably more similar to that performance at Hillsborough. It was probably the home version of that game. It was just terrible.
Tom, how would you follow that? To be honest, I'm assuming you're going to be on the same lines.
pretty much. I mean, I've tried to put the game out of my mind. We were talking just before we started, me and Dana. I just said, I woke up and forgot we even played yesterday. And it's just a recurring theme at the moment of coming away from the Riverside disappointed and then just trying to forget about it. Yesterday, we were absolutely horrendous. I have found myself in recent weeks kind of questioning more and more the decisions being made by Carrick and the coaching staff, because I feel like it gets to the point with managers where when they're making decisions that the fans can see are so obviously wrong, it's like something's really, really going wrong and really going downhill from here. That front four and McGree playing up front, it's literally the simplest thing on the pitch to sort out. You play McGree on the left, Azaz in the middle, Silvera on the right, and Force up front. It is literally that simple. Just put them in the right places. There was a guy on BBC Tees after the game who was saying, I just want to see round pegs and round holes. That is exactly the way you sum it up. Force is a striker. I know it worked last season playing him right wing when we had Akpom and Archer. We don't anymore. Play him up front in his natural position. Play McGree back where, you know, he was most effective. You know, even a change of system back to what was working last season, which Dana, you said on BBC Tees yesterday, have McGree making nuisance of himself on the left-hand side, playing more of a centre-attacking mid rather than a winger, let Engel overlap and get the crosses in. On that point, Engel should always be playing based on yesterday. If Engel has one leg, Luke Thomas should still not be playing ahead of him. Because that was probably the worst performance from a Borough left-back I have seen. Honestly, it was like watching Lee Dong-gook reincarnate at left-back. You know, there was a point in the first half where Luke Thomas just tripped over the ball and got a free. I was like, that's so incredibly fortunate because he's running around here like Bambi on ice and he somehow just managed to get a free kick and avoid giving the ball away in a dangerous area.
That was incredible. On a
similar note, I mean, Luke Thomas next week, he should be playing left back, but it should be left back at home while the rest of the team go to Stoke. Tom Glover as well, unless Dieng has two broken hands, should not be starting in goal. Why Dieng's been on the bench for so long, he's clearly fit enough to be around the match day squad. He's clearly fit enough to warm up, but why are we sticking with Tom Glover? Because he makes simple mistakes like he did yesterday for the first goal and just palming it back out to, you know, unopposed opposition players. He's made a few good saves, but he just really doesn't fill me with confidence playing out from the back. And I don't think he fills the centre-backs with confidence either, because there were points yesterday where him, Van den Berg and McNair were all arguing between themselves. I was like, you didn't get that with Dieng. Like, just put him back in. It's a simple thing to change, but I feel like the confidence the defence will get from just having Dieng back there is going to benefit us so much. I would be interested. Was it Glover in goal for the West Brom game? The last time we got a clean sheet, I think it might have been, but I feel like there's a definite trend of our defensive frailties in the last couple of months and Dieng being out of the team. I just think it's such a simple thing. Just put him back in goal. If he's fit enough to be on the bench and fit enough to warm up and train and stuff, put him back in. I know it's a big decision to take out a goalkeeper, but realistically, Tom Glover was only our number two goalkeeper this season anyway.
Yeah, I agree with that, Tom, in terms of Dieng and also Engel as well. Like, it definitely felt like yesterday, I was like, I'll give Thomas benefit. That one when he signed, it was like, I need to watch him in the system. And I said it on our lowdown show, I just need to see him, how he's going to play, because I wasn't like not overly convinced. It was just, I just need to see him like in person, because I couldn't like look at it. The numbers weren't particularly great. But then I was like, well, it's two relegated sides, so is that going to really hinder him? And then, like, I was watching him again yesterday, and I was like, oh, this is a really bad performance, really. But I was sat there, just like, what does Engel have to do? But come on. And people have proper stinkers, and I think collectively as a group, everyone had a stinker yesterday. I thought we were absolutely awful as well, from start to finish. And it's the same old. I feel like you've got an Achilles heel with Carrick's system, really. And it's just like that. It's that box midfield. It absolutely rinses us as a team. And when I see teams play, I'm just like, well, we won't break the lines or anything because we try to play through a team where a box midfield, you need to rely more on playing wide, you need to get people on the transition, and also surrender some of the play as well. Like yesterday is a prime example when teams play in a certain way. I would have happily seen us play in the same system as we did against Leicester, because when teams come in as a box midfield like that, you need to hit them on the transition and get them on the counter-attack. And I feel like we need to sometimes give up the ball sometimes, because possession play is all well and good, but if you can't break the lines, you need to take a step back and kind of say, well, actually, how can we start to make more of an impact on the game? But I thought we were really, really bad yesterday from start to finish, and we need to do more, and we need to be adaptable, and we need to potentially change things around for the next few games just to stop the rot and get some more points on the board. And, you know, it's not exactly the season's done and dusted, but you may as well not probably be very, 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 very low chance of getting promoted or getting the playoff places. Sorry, very, very low chance. So you may as well test and try new methods now, because you're not going to go down. I don't think, hopefully, fingers crossed, it's still like 9 points, but you're not going to get relegated. But try the three and try and be a bit more of a transitional team for the next few games, because that's where probably most of our strengths lie. If you've got Isaiah Jones playing, you've got Pace, it's still there as a transitional player. But Gree finds the space really well. Lattelaf's very, very good at getting them behind. So is Marcus Force. So play at that side of strength, because when we're trying to play around from the back too much, it's too slow. Teams get back into shape. Team will play over mid-block. They'll block the central areas. We can't get through. And then it's just job done. So if you want to give me the job, lads, just give me the job. But in terms of the Boro again, Tom, like, again, we're giving ourselves a mountain to climb at home. Are you really concerned with that trend? Because time and time again, Boro going behind, the game's pretty much done. They've got so much to do. And there was times last year where we could bail ourselves out of it because we were taking the chances that we created. Now we're the second highest in terms of big chances missed in the division. So we don't really have that capability anymore. So you're a bit concerned with how Boro conceding quite a lot at home now?
I think it has to be a concern. And I think it's the key difference between last season and this one. Last season, we could go 1-0 down at home, and I would be sat there and think, this is fine. Like, not as in the meme of the dog where everything's on fire behind him, but like, oh, this is fine. No, this is fine as in, we can come back from this. We've done it so often last season. We go 1-0 down this season, and I'm just thinking, that's it. Like, we don't have it in us at the moment to come back and win anymore. I'm pretty sure we did in the earlier part of the season, but now it's getting to the point where it happens in our home games, and I'm just kind of like, I've got no faith that we're going to come back from this. And I think the other key thing is that, especially yesterday, although I did note it against Bristol as well, Riverside's generally becoming a little bit toxic when we go a goal down, and people start getting on the players' backs a lot more. I did note in the first half yesterday, and again, I don't know if this is just because of the defence and Glover not really linking that well and not having the confidence in each other, but there was a real kind of abandonment of our principles of playing out at the back, because it'd be passed around the back to the point where we're pressed that high up that Glover just hoofs it up the pitch and gets rid of it. But we're picking the wrong passes. And while all that is happening, the crowd is just getting on everyone's back. And you know what? I can't blame the people in the crowd for it, because in recent games at home, we've been absolutely terrible. And, you know, people want to come to the Riverside and know that we are harder to beat at home. We want it to be that sort of fortress that it was last season, or, you know, wasn't in the promotion season and stuff. But when you're coming to the Riverside and you're seeing us get beat off Plymouth, Bristol, Hull, I'm missing others here, but you're coming and seeing that, and you're seeing poor displays, it's no wonder it's getting to that point where the crowd are just getting on the players' backs. And like I say, they seem pressured to the point where they're forgetting our philosophy, and they're just trying to kind of get rid, or someone will have a different idea to the rest of the team and they'll give the ball away.
Yeah, and look, confidence plays a massive part in football, to be honest. Like, it's huge, and if you don't feel confident or wanting the ball all the time, it can be really difficult to play out. Like, that concept for me of, if you can try and get three or four passes to break the lines, and then if you can't, just switch the play. is really, really valuable for me. And we just don't do it. And I feel like sometimes, and it happened a lot of times yesterday, where we'll get the ball out wide and then we'll play it central and then we'll play it back to the box that someone was in. And then instead of working the ball out and then switching it and getting somewhere, we were always trying to work ourselves in a really small place of the pitch. And by that time, when you do that, you've got three or four players from the opposition team to pretty much block that area. And then you're starting all over again, you're losing the ball. You don't need to receive the ball and then run back to... So the example was, a fine example of it, was Silvera got the ball on the left-hand side. He played it to Balassa, and then Balassa ran towards Silvera and then played it back to him. And then he played it to Thomas, and then we played it back to Balassa in the same position. And I was like, what are you doing? Just switch the bloody player and get the ball away, because that box midfield is there to be like done. But frustrating, man. It's so frustrating. But I think with that as well, I think sometimes you've got to give up a little bit. I think which one you said about philosophy, Tom, as well, you've got to give up a little bit sometimes just to give yourself a bit more balance, and also to kind of make yourself a bit harder. But since we're missing so many chances now, it kind of comes to a point where you kind of go, right, we need to give us something a little bit away, become a bit more defensively sound, and then hopefully just kind of go, right, if we get two or three chances, we just need to put them away. Instead of creating volume, try and create better quality. And hopefully if we can do that, then we'll start to you know, we'll keep the goals. We'll still be a creative team. We'll still be, on paper, fairly decent side. And we do look at our times, but I would say in recent weeks, we've been really, really poor. And sometimes it's just you have to know when and when to kind of park something and try something different. But then it was the first time in a long time, really, where we've seen a Borough side not have a shot on target. So what do you think Plymouth did so well yesterday defensively to kind of limit Borough to get some chances?
Well, Ian Foster said it after the game that they were very disciplined tactically, and they had that really set flat back five where the wing backs had gone deeper and blocked off that space, and then they had four in midfield as well, and it basically shut Borough off. It's like, oh, Borough have possession, absolutely fine, there's no threat there whatsoever. And then Borough themselves basically influenced probably did influence Plymouth's ability to defend in that second half, because as you said there, so predictable in how we move the ball, and we're not getting ourselves into good enough opportunities. And what we did really well under Wilder, and I thought of this yesterday, and also while you were mentioning about Borough's play then, Johnny, we were so good at shifting the play from one side to another. That's why you saw us so good on that right-hand side, because we would culminate possession on the left and then we would spring it over to the right, and it would be done quite quickly as well. And we just don't have that. I'm getting so frustrated with our wide play. So incredibly, it's actually infuriating, because I'll see it in the second half that Ayling will be getting forward. But why is it Ayling getting forward? Because he doesn't have the legs to get back. And then when we do get caught on the turnover, as we inevitably do, because we're poor in possession as well in moments, then you've got someone that Leeds fans told us has no legs anymore. Well, not doesn't have no legs. He doesn't have it in his legs anymore, trying to recover those yards. And it's just like, it's so frustrating. So, I mean, fair play to Plymouth. I think they were really well drilled, but that's all they have to be, because Borough play into an opposition team's hands. They don't make it difficult. They don't knock on the door. And I was so bored yesterday. And I don't think that I've been bored that often watching Michael Carrick's Middlesbrough. It was scintillating last season. It was. And even though it hasn't been scintillating this season, it hasn't usually been boring, but I was thoroughly bored yesterday. I just sat there in a relaxed state because I knew that I didn't have to get up anytime soon. We weren't fashioning opportunities. We weren't proper like going for it, creating good opportunities in good spaces to then, I don't know, play across, have a shot, do something. We were just, everything was so condensed. We're all so bunched in the same areas, like you mentioned, Johnny. There's no out ball. There's no quickness. It was so slow and so predictable. So, yeah, Plymouth had that shape. They were very organised, but that's all they needed to be. And in the end, I'm not surprised that we didn't have a shot on target, because it just, that was our performance. And, yeah, it's just annoying.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Yeah, and look, we'll probably come to it in a second, but I would like us to try maybe shift to a back three, but I'll come with it in a moment, because you were saying there, Dan, around that they had to just be disciplined and didn't really have to have too much influence of the game and just wait for the moment for Bora to make the mistake. And there's a couple of mistakes. We'll break down the goals, because we haven't done this in a while, and also I think it'd be really good to kind of see that how that really played out. So that first goal, Bora go behind early doors, and it's all from their own doing, really, right?
It is. Absolutely. We have the ball just in front of the halfway line to the right of the centre circle. Now, Barlasser plays a square ball to O'Brien. That pass itself is fine. I know that Dan Barlasser is Borough's biggest boo boy right now, but that pass is absolutely fine. The problems start because O'Brien doesn't set himself for the ball. He checks his shoulder, he loses where the ball actually is, and he stretches in vain to receive it. Randall picks it up. Plymouth counter really quickly. They create an overload on their left-hand side, which leaves our left-hand side extremely exposed. So fair play, Plymouth. They accrue a lot of players on that left-hand side. And then Borough's left-hand side, incredibly exposed. Matthew Sorinola, Plymouth's right wing back, has so much space, and play advances. Giawi has it on the left-hand corner of the box, and what opens up is this corridor of space for him to shift the ball onto his right foot and shoot, which he does. I just wonder, in that situation, could one of our midfield players, be it O'Brien or Barlasser, have continued their run, because they both kind of put the brakes on to block off that avenue. That way, he either gets crowded out, or the shot gets blocked, or he recycles possession to Morgan Whittaker, and Bora have the chance to get back into shape, because it's all very messy. Obviously, we get caught on the counter-attack. All whilst this is happening, Sorinola still has acres of space to be in a position to benefit from, I don't know, a lofted ball to the back post, or, as we saw it, a rebound. Now, I watched Finazaz throughout this clip, and he does check to have a look to his right once, but then he continues to accelerate forwards, and it looks like he's focused on Randall in the centre, who is already being dealt with by Luke Thomas. So another question, could Azaz have spotted that threat and switched to track Sorinola? Because in the end, once the parry is made by Glover and you can maybe question him in that instance, he still has space and has a completely free shot on goal. Nobody is close enough to challenge or block or at least make things difficult. It's just a really poor avoidable goal. And there's been so many this season.
Yeah, and the goal as well, Thomas, want to bring you in on the Glover save. Do you think you can do better there? Where do you think? Because I'm thinking more Palm out, try and play a bit further wide, but he looks like he plays a straight in win, right?
Yeah, I mean, look, I haven't watched it back because I don't watch highlights when Borough have lost. It just makes me annoyed. In real time, it looked like such a soft shot. And I think most of the people around me were questioning why he couldn't have just held it. If you can't hold it, at least don't parry it back out into that area. You'd think, I couldn't say on that screenshot, but you'd think, although Glover's focused on the ball, he'll have at least known from his peripheral vision that there was a player there. If you push it back out in front of you, then there are more Borough players there than the Plymouth player in the middle. I think it would still be Randall at that point. There's probably a better chance there that we can clear it, but parrying it back out wide like that, it just gives him such an easy chance. But like I said, in real time, I just thought it was a very soft shot and he could have held that. I found myself questioning, you know, could Dieng have held that or at least done better with it? And I would probably think so.
Yeah, and look, I think he could have done better as well, but I think it's what it is. We're 1-0 down. And we talk about the second goal as well. We talk about like how Borough give a team a really good opportunity and they're on downfall. But this is a really good play from Plymouth, to be honest. But also, it does highlight Borough, you know, not being effective defensively. And there's always a really good saying that the biggest error comes 3 or 4 passes before a goal has happened. The Plymouth midfield, Gabby, he drops into a nice little pocket of space where Randall plays a nice little combination play with Sorinola. And Rav Vandenberg, he has a decision to make. He either follows his man in centrally and tries to block the player off getting the turn, or he drops back in centre half. He decides to go back. So if he is going back, you need Barlasset to come in to essentially just kind of go, right, we need to block this player off. We just get a little bit tighter, don't let him turn you, and just try and force the ball out wide to Whittaker. But we don't. We all drop back instead and we give him a lot of space to turn over the shoulder, play the ball through to Hardy, and Hardy does really, really well. Drops it on his right foot and then plays it in the bottom corner. But that goal as well, it's really easy if you look at it from, it's like a 5-second clip of just how this goal is really happened. And to give a midfielder the absolute time just to check his shoulder, turn, even he turned inwards as well instead of like turning out, and also just seeing his man and playing it through. And for me, that is really poor defensively. I think you've got to be so much better in those moments. And if that combination play is there, it's so easy to play through. But then also, like, as well, you've got to be have some sort of communication there. If Rav's going to drop back, then Ballas has to come in. And he doesn't. And the turn, it's so easy, it's so preventable. But that, for me, was the biggest reason why Borough conceded that goal. It wasn't the shot from Hardy. It wasn't the goal, because it's a really good finish in the bottom corner. But for me, that is where the biggest fault lies in terms of that goal. But in terms of like solutions and stuff, like, and how we can potentially improve for the remainder of the season, Danny, would you be like opting for a back 3-0? Would you like Borough to still stay with that 4-2-3-1? It is a 3-2-5 in some aspects, or a 4-2-4 when we do tend to play in possession. So it's not, I'm saying, like, what I'm trying to say is formations aren't really static anymore. They're very fluid. Mm. But
yeah,
would you like to see Borough maybe start more in a back three and play with maybe a back three or a five than what they're currently doing now?
Yeah, to be honest, I would like to see it. But more than that, I would like to see Borough switch up their approach a little bit, because I think we've got the players to hurt teams on the transition. It is absolutely no surprise that we did that against Leicester. And people will say, oh, well, that's Leicester. And obviously they are a quality team. But actually, a lot of teams in the Championship are playing possession-based football. There has been a bit of a discussion around how it's becoming quite boring in a way, that there's not a whole load of variety in the Championship anymore. Managers come into clubs and they want to play that possession dominant style, which is absolutely fine. Matt Robbins at Coventry has got it absolutely spot on, where I think he will, or Coventry will try to create counter-attacking situations for themselves. I think Borough suit counter-attacking football. Maybe not as a whole. I'm not saying for Borough to abandon their principles, their style of play, but just to switch it up a little bit. You mentioned the players that suit that. I think you excluded Lewis O'Brien as well. Lewis O'Brien is a fantastic ball player. Like, he carries the ball really well, and he's very box-to-box, very energetic. I almost think playing a possession-dominant style actually, I wouldn't say hinders him, not that. I just think that he would probably suit counter-attacking a lot more. And as you said, Silvera, bit of pace, Jones, bit of pace, Latilath, bit of pace. Listen, we're not blessed with it in the team, but they're the three players that I think would probably have it. I'm just wondering, can we start to maybe adopt a little bit more of a quick transition? Because we were so good at that last season, and I know that we do not have the same personnel, but we were top for counter-attacking goals, or goals from the counter-attacking situations. I still think that we do have that within us to be a successful side when counter-attacking. So, yeah, maybe we do need to give up possession a little bit. Maybe we do need to surrender in certain situations, give the opposition the ball, even at home, and see what we can do with that. Because, yeah, the possession-based style that we're playing at the moment is not working. We can't break teams down. Sometimes we do create chances, but then we spurn them, and then there's a problem, at least in the last two home games, with actually creating them. So everyone's searching for answers. Carrick is overcomplicating things at the moment in terms of personnel. Can we try to adopt a more counter-attacking, quick transition style? That's the question that I sort of took from the Leicester game, a little bit in isolation, but also thinking about how I see us in counter-attacking situations.
Yeah, and look, when we play out from the back, like, we do try and create like a... It's not a proper transition, really, but it's like you when you do play out from the back, you do kind of create... It's kind of like a weird counter-attack, isn't it, when you do play out from the back, because, you know, a lot of teams press forward, you break the lines, and then they're all running back, and that was what you tend to see the same as a counter-attack in itself. And, you know, like some I was saying about, like, surrendering the ball a little bit, when teams have the ball and they're trying to play that more possession-based style, they do leave a lot of space, like, in certain areas, and, you know, that might suit us because we are comfortable out at playing out from, like, in tight areas. We are comfortable doing it, so I don't mind giving us up a little bit of possession just so we can start to, you know, be a bit more impactful going forward. But we do need good wing backs for that. If we are to move to maybe a three, or maybe to move to something a bit different. And Tom, like, would you like to see maybe like Dyche, Steele, and Engel come in for Aylin and Thomas, because they've both been, I would say, been the suspect.
Yeah, but I would like to see it for different reasons than what you've just outlined there. For me, we're not playing the same as what worked last season. I think we've tried a few different kind of variations of it throughout the season. Early on, I remember us playing Jones and Silvera as inverted wingers. And, you know, I think even though it is similar formation-wise, there are still aspects of it that just don't work, but we could be doing better at. And the wing-backs or full-backs come into this. I think something that worked really well for us last season was that left-hand side. And obviously, we don't have Ryan Giles anymore. However, we do have Lucas Engel, who's, you know, been signed at his previous club, was an attacking fullback. He's got a decent delivery on him. But either by instruction or there's something in his head that's not allowing him to do it, we don't see him get past the halfway line much. And I'd love to see a comparison of like heat maps between him and Giles season on season, because I feel like Giles would be so far up the pitch compared to where Engel is. I think we just need to take the reins off a little bit on that left-hand side. Like I said earlier, I think it's really simple to sort out the attacking options. You put McGree on the left-hand side, but by doing that, he'll come inside, create space on the left. Engel can get up and down and get crosses in. At that point, you need a striker in the box who's going to be in the right position, force I mean, in terms of his attacking runs and positioning, can do that. Laf can do that. I was noting in the last couple of games that Finn Azaz was arriving in the box at the right time to get on the end of stuff as well. So on that side, it's something I'd like to see more. On the right-hand side, I'd like to see Dyke Steele come in for Aylin, because as you mentioned earlier, Aylin, I think especially around the hour mark of 70 minutes, he just loses all of his legs and he can't get back. But it does seem like he's, I think especially a couple of games ago, he was our like go-to option for getting deliveries in the box on the right-hand side. And I'm just like, why have we resorted to essentially Wilder ball when it wasn't working and just trying these low crosses from the right-hand side, which are getting cut out? And obviously it's knackering Luke Aylin out quite early as well. I'd rather see Dyke still there. But in the same way as last season, we had Tommy Smith there who could get forward when needed, but also when we go forward on the left-hand side, could move in field and become a free. And I think Dyke still would do that better than Tommy Smith anyway, because he has had that experience of playing at centre-back. So I think as a solution on those sides, it's Dyke Steele on the right and Engel on the left. And as I mentioned earlier, Dieng back in goal, but for the reason of distribution. I think another thing with Glover, and I don't want to sound like I'm kind of bashing him too much here, but I don't think he has the confidence to be kind of like spraying balls out to the wings like Dieng would on a very frequent basis. So you do that, you get the ball out to the left, you make your chances down that side. We've got ability down the right-hand side to make chances as well. And I think those changes would probably work quite well in kind of going back to the system that last season was working for us. And like I say, we have changed that up a couple of times this season and we're not really playing the same way, even if it is the same formation.
Dan, what do you think?
Well, I agree with that. I would say, though, Rav, right back, because I think he has the intelligence to play right back. He might not be as dazzling at right back as he is at centre half, but similar to the point that Tom made, having a more conservative right back and actually a left back that gets quite high up the pitch and maintains that width for Borough, I think would be really important. In possession, shift to a back three, which, you know, Carrick said that we did yesterday, but for me, it shouldn't be the left back. It should be the right back that's the more conservative, because we do have Lucas Engel there, who, you know, we did our research on and was a big chance creator last season in the Danish league. And I think we really, really need to embrace that. And Carrick is, as I mentioned, he just keeps overcomplicating things. I really want to see that back three in the build out with the left back being the one that bombs forward, because as well, you do have Riley McGree on that left-hand side. When he comes in central, it gives that space for the left back. It's so frustrating because I know that we don't have Ryan Giles anymore, but still that doesn't mean that we should abandon what actually proved to be a really fruitful avenue for us last season. So that's what I would like to see. Rav right back, get Engel forward, take the shackles off that boy and let him fly, and just, oh, can we just have some width on that left-hand side? I'm so sick of seeing him barely cross the halfway line. We need to start utilising him more in the attacking areas of the pitch for me.
Just a point on that as well, in terms of like the signings we've made in the summer on the left-hand side, it looks like it was a very similar profile, or we were at least trying to recreate what we had with Giles last season in terms of the attacking output. You got Engel, who has a good delivery from that side, and you got Banguru, who was very, very pacey, couldn't get up that left-hand side, and was a good dribbler of the ball as well. And it just seems like we've not utilised Engel properly. It did seem like when Banguru came on, he was allowed to get forwards quite often. I do wonder if that's where his hamstring injuries have come from, because he was running that quick up and down the line. But yeah, it just seems like we've recruited for what we were doing last season and then not stuck to what we were doing last season.
Yeah, and for me, guys, I would just say one more thing. Let Chef Engel cook. That's all I'm saying. just let him cook. But Tom, final question on this before we move into podcast questions. what's probably would you to say is the one thing you would like to see from Borough when they go play Stoke next week?
Well, I'd say a win, but it's not even against Stoke that I want to see the reaction. I want to go to the Riverside next time we go to home game and see us win it and see us actually play the way we can do. Because I don't sound disrespectful to Stoke, but I half expect us to go there and win because it's away. And that's not where our issues have been. Our issues are the home form. Right at this moment, but in terms of a response from Carrick, I want to see him kind of sort the team out completely and start putting, as the guy on BBC has mentioned, round pegs and round holes. I want to see us go, you know, bring Dieng back into the team, bring Engel back into the team, and just have a front four that makes sense and not watch Riley McGree trying to play number nine because he's not a number nine. Just put them all in the right positions and just be normal with your selection. Don't stop using a randomizer to pick your front four.
I'd be interested. Imagine if you did that, like, so at Rockcliffe, he's just like, okay, put everyone in a hat and he just goes, oh, it's as you're playing the number nine. Everyone goes, hey, and then like,
it would answer a lot of questions, to be fair.
It would. It really would. But you know, that's what happens when you don't have a striker. But let's move on to podcast questions now. Yes, podcast questions. Every week you get the chance to ask us a podcast question via Twitter, @Borough_breakdown, email theborroughbreakdown@hotmail.com, or by joining our Telegram chat with over 417 Borough fans chatting everything but Borough. Well, sometimes we do, sometimes we don't. But the first question, Tom, I'm going to come to you on this one. It's from David, it's on email as well, and say, there was such a good feel factor at the club at the end of last season, and at the moment it feels like it's getting a bit toxic at home, which you mentioned earlier, Tom, with some poor results and the early bird ticket fiasco. How was the feeling seemingly switched so quickly? Tom, what do you think?
I feel like it's just because of how we've planned the season and having it being kind of more of a transition season between... Well, we hope it's a transition season between that playoff run last season and hopefully building a team to go for it again. We have had signings this season who've just taken time to gel and really kind of find their place within the team and grow within the Championship, really. Because of that, I feel like it has led to poor results. I think the results at home, like we mentioned, it is explainable in the fact that, especially in the last couple of months, we're really missing some of, I don't want to say missing some of our key players because we have had them back from injury, but it's the likes of Dieng not being in the team, and you know, we're obviously missing McGree for quite a while as well. I just feel like there's no real, I don't want to say fluidity because we unfortunately have too much of that up front, but it's really not the same team or the same play style as last season. I think that is frustrating for fans, where we thought we were onto something good last season in terms of the play style and you know where we got to in the league, and then it's just been completely different this season in terms of probably our aims as a club, but also just testing these things and not playing in the same sort of systems being quite annoying. So yeah, I think a front at home that really sums it up. And obviously, the more we get poor performances, the more that toxicity is going to grow. And then obviously, the early bird ticket thing probably hasn't helped as well. I think especially with the last couple of results, fans will be looking at that, looking at the price increase, looking at, well, the deadline's obviously been moved back now, but probably thinking, is this worth 530 quid, or is it better to just not get a season ticket next year and pick and choose games? Because if you're paying 530 quid, you generally expect I don't want to say expect success, but considering you're one of the highest season ticket prices in the league, you probably want some football to back that up, and we just haven't seen it this season. So it's kind of like, if I'm paying 530 quid and then I'm going to be watching this again for another season, is that money well spent, or, you know, should I be spending that elsewhere? I'm saying 530 quid, by the way, that's for my season ticket. We did have a comment last week when I was kind of saying my thoughts on the season ticket rise and justifying the price to myself, saying, oh, it's not just that for a family and stuff. Totally get that. And it's probably more expensive in other areas of the ground. That is purely for mine that I'm talking about out there. But yeah, you're probably looking at that and thinking, is this something I want to be spending my money on for the rest of the season? And the recent results at home and the recent performances really won't be helping in that respect either.
Yeah, you can come watch the game with me, Tom, in Albania, if you want. So we'll go and do that next season. Dana, we'll move on to the next question, and it's from Liv. And she says, would Rodgers and Horcrux have made a difference to our current form and predicament?
I don't think so, mostly because Rodgers performed better in the Cup than he did in the Championship. Not saying he didn't perform in the Championship. I think, as we mentioned on the podcast where he left, he was kind of getting into his stride, wasn't he? Crux is obviously a very effective player, and he comes up with a lot of good moments. But I do think that Borough's current predicament is bigger than just two departing players. I think there needs to be significant changes in the summer. And I don't mean that by saying in terms of the number of signings. I mean the type of signings that we bring in, most notably a number nine that can stretch a game, that can drop deep, has a little bit of everything. So I think that, yeah, just to answer that question in full, I think that where Borough find themselves right now and the struggles of this of you know, present, it's kind of bigger than two players for me.
Okay, then. Well, that was podcast questions for this week. But let's move on. Let's move to one of my favourite segments of this show, and I call it Who Wants to Be a Trivianaire, where every week I give Dana and Tom a question to get some answers. And, you know, who's going to be right? Who knows? There is no money involved. But there are a question. It'd be good to see if you can name them as well. If you're driving, you're walking your dog, you're feeding the cat, whatever you're doing, try and find these five players. Because the question this week is, Borough and Stoke have done five deals between them for five defenders in recent history. Can you name the five defenders that have been transferred in that time? So you've got 30 seconds. Got any questions, guys, before I press the start? No, no questions. Excellent. So your timer starts now. Yes, time is up. So, guys, the five defenders that have been transferred between the clubs in recent history, who have you got? Tom, would you like to go first on this one?
I do only have three, though. I've gone with Hoof, Pogatetz, and Danny Bart.
Ooh, okay. Okay, then. Dana, who are you going to go for?
I have no recollection of Pogatetz playing for Stoke. So if that happened, then that missed me. I've gone Huth, Tommy Smith, Jonathan Woodgate.
Okay, you've got three there, Dana. You do have three out of the five. And Tom, I'm just going to have a quick look at the Danny Bart one, just for clarification. I'm going to say it's incorrect, the Danny Bart question, because Middlesbrough got him on loan from Wolves, and then he went back to Wolves and then went to Stoke the following season. So I can't give you that one, unfortunately, but it was a great answer. In terms of Manuel Pogatetz, he didn't play for Stoke either. However, the answer is this. I'm also welcome back to Manuel Pogatetz, by the way, to England, you know, assistant manager at Crystal Palace now. But the answer to this question, Danny, you did get three of them with Tommy Smith, Jonathan Woodgate, and Robert Huth. But the two other players are Chris Riggott in 2007 and 2008. And the last one is Andrew Davies in 2010 to 2011. So the five people are Tommy Smith, Jonathan Mugget, Andrew Davies, Robert Huth, and Chris Riggott. I thought I would pick defenders this week since we both can't defend. So let's move on to the game at the Bet365. Or the Britannia, it just sounds so much better when it's the Britannia instead of the Bet365. But they fell at the bottom three at the weekend after a defeat against Cardiff with six defeats in seven. So we asked Ben Rowley, and I really felt sorry for him at this point, to give us a voice note and some insight of what's been going on at the Bet365 this season.
Hey up, Borough Breakdown. My name's Ben. And today I am a very sad, bitter, exasperated Stoke City fan. And Johnny has very kindly asked me to come on your podcast to talk about the game coming up next weekend, Stoke versus Borough at the Bet365 Stadium. So here we go. From a Stoke City point of view, the headline going into this game is we are in the relegation zone, which is the first time that's happened since 2020. And after seven seasons, pretty much, we're in the seventh season of our banter era. We may have finally done it. We may have peaked negatively as a club. It's absolute chaos currently at Stoke City. If you don't know what's been going on in the last 12 months or so, thanks to, in part, having a decent March, which included beating you guys down at your place, we were able to stay up last season, and therefore we went on a big shopping spree. We signed 24 players this season. We've replaced basically every footballing member of staff that I can think of. I can't think of anyone at all that survived. That includes Alex Neil, who we started the season with, and Ricky Martin, the technical director, who have both left. And ever since, Stephen Schumacher's come in. And I wouldn't be surprised after our loss against Cardiff on Saturday that he may be a casualty before we get to play you guys. So giving you a preview of the actual game is going to be very difficult because I don't even know if our manager is going to be in place. And if he isn't, or even if he is, because he makes so many changes game to game, I have no idea who's going to play. I have no idea what our style is going to be like. Is Schumacher going to be in charge? Is he going to keep his philosophy? Is he going to give up on the whole thing and just go back to the wall? Are we going to bring in Tony Pulis finally after not having him for a manager for 12 years or so? We're due to have him back. Are we going to go for Gareth Ainsworth as it's been ruined and confirm our death spiral? I don't know. Hopefully, this has been some sort of entertainment because I genuinely have no other analysis to give you other than Stoke are can have good passages of play in games. You know, they've got a couple of good players like Wouter Burger, Bajan Ho, but critically we are unforgivably poor in both boxes. We give away the softest of goals and we cannot finish to save our life. And our confidence is at an all-time low. I don't know how we get out of this mess. You guys are going to have to do us a big favour if you want to keep us around next season for whatever reason and get us a win because I really don't see where our next points are going to come from at this rate. It's really poor. I know that your guys' season's tailed off a little bit as well, which is disappointing for you guys, I'm sure. I know that at the start of the season, you guys were touted for big things, perhaps haven't recruited quite in the way that you'd hoped for after losing a couple of players in the summer. But seriously, guys, if you think it's poor, you want to be a Stoke City fan. I know that some clubs are going under. I know that some clubs are at risk of extinction from the Football League or collapse altogether. But in terms of an owner who is not too dissimilar to yours, you know, a fan of the club and, you know, a wealthy owner who wants their clubs to do really well, this severe mismanagement is culminating in an absolutely embarrassing set of affairs. So, you guys better win on Saturday, because otherwise, well, I mean, if we win, we'll be preventing the inevitable for another week, I think. That wasn't very articulate or insightful, I apologise, but hopefully you got some entertainment from whatever this has been for the last 5 minutes or so. Enjoy the game on Saturday. Cheers, guys.
Oh, Ben. I feel for that boy. I really do. I messaged him and I was like, I Mitch, fancy just giving us some insight. And I felt like there was a, do I really have to? But I do appreciate him so much, because every time I speak to him, I feel just a little bit more bad, because he absolutely loves Stoke, but he's at a point where he's just so done with it. Do you know what I mean? But I mean, if you're going to hire a singer as your director of football and Ricky Martin, then you know what I mean? That's all you can do, you know.
Awful.
So we'll chat about Stoke then, guys, because we go there, we probably are just in desperate of the need of a win, as they are, to be honest, to keep our, you know, not season going, but also make sure we don't go down. How would you see it going? So, Tom, what is your prediction going into the game against Stoke?
I think based on everything Ben just said there, probably 2-0 Stoke. Like it's, it's, I thought it was tomorrow, wouldn't it? So, yeah, that's what I'm going with. I think it's the most likely result. Like, it doesn't sound like they've won in years. So, yeah, they're probably going to win against us.
Dylan, what are you going to go for? How are you feeling?
Well, I was looking at our record at the Britannia whilst Ben was talking there, and since it opened in 1997, Borough have played there 8 times and won just twice. Once in 1998 and the other time in 2020, which was Neil Warnock's first game in charge, I believe. So I'm going to go for a draw. I don't think we're going to end that bad run. 1-1 for me is my prediction.
1-1. I don't have a clue. I generally don't have a clue. Are we gonna do it? The game against, I'm going to just say Plymouth, because of when we drew 3-3, I thought Schumacher was really unfortunate not to, win the game. Although we created plenty of chances, so much to score 3 and find a way to beat us. This is a different team, of course, entirely. Stoke are being mismanaged, having a bit of a stinker of a season. So like Tom said, it all lines up for us to get absolutely done 3-0, and we just go home and we end up beating Norwich on the Wednesday, about 5-0. So it'd just be very Borough to do it, wouldn't it? But yeah, I think my actual prediction, I would probably say we've got enough. And I think if we do make the adjustments that we've been talking about, which, who knows, I think we could go on to win the game. I think away from home, we seem to be a lot better. And fingers crossed we can do it. So I'm going to go 2-1 Borough. But guys, thank you very much for joining me, as always. To listeners and viewers, I'll say thank you as well, because we hit 250 episodes last week. We didn't even realise until we started editing the podcast that we hit 250. So I'll say a big thank you for everyone who's listened to us, shared the podcast, engaged with it. And keep doing that as well, because, you know, here's to the next 250 if we haven't been killed by Borough or just been sick of them, because, you know... I'm just doing my editing, and I'm so glad I'm leaving this pod for a few weeks and coming back all refreshed. But for right now, guys, this has been the Borough Breakdown Podcast. And I, you know what, I just want to say one thing before I leave. I really love trees. Anyway, this has been the Borough Breakdown Podcast, and that was our Borough Match Day Chatter in a pod up the Borough Breakdown.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers, with rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's stamps.com. Code program.